In 3, 2, 1, Alex, you're on the air.
Thank you, Michael, and welcome back.
Thanks, it's good to be back.
Hello, everyone. We've decided to do a probably brief podcast.
Yeah, like an addendum.
To come back. We had so many great discussions over the past week, what we always do.
Right.
I wanted to bring back some more bring back some more information, add to it, because we feel that these are such important times for all of us, and then we need to take action, you know, we need to, and not just any action, but action that is beneficial, which is something that most of the time we wouldn't even know what it is, or we get pointed in the wrong direction, or it's also confused. And we're not saying that we have the right information or ideas. I would say the biggest part of listening to any of these podcasts is that you come in bringing your 50%, or like last time, your 23 chromosomes. You should be half of this. You should be listening and questioning. If you like an idea, you might want to play, take it in a whole different area. Other bits you go, nope, not interested, or whatever. What you get out of it, in a sense, is not our business.
No. No, it's a lot of this is alluding, getting back to what Alex was saying about the podcasts, and anything that I say is not... It's not written in stone. I never take even what I say at full face value, because it can change next week. I always remain flexible. We did a prior podcast with 2% doubt as a weapon, and I'm always prepared with the 2% doubt, even when I'm 99% sure.
Okay, that's 101. So with that said, and hoping, 98% trusting that you will take this advice and make sure that you're half of everything that you listen to, everything, bring your...
Oh, and it's not advice, it's information.
Right. It's, well, it's how, you, again, you know, for you to take it exactly. Yeah.
Take it as information.
Do what you want. So with that, we're bringing in some new ideas, information again, for you to choose exactly what you want to do with them.
And can I just share where we came up with these ideas?
Yes.
Over breakfast at a cafe, folks.
Of course.
Steve Quayle said that some of his best ideas come in a shower. Some of our best conversations and ideas come at a French cafe.
Absolutely.
So I highly recommend going to a French cafe near you.
So, we've come a long way since last week, but we also wanted to broaden on. We haven't left things behind. One of the big things that we've been playing with is the idea that the Bible, that everything in this world is this, that, we're told it's duality, you know, everything is a mix of two things. The yin and the yang is a good example.
Mm-hmm.
If you come to the chessboard, looking at this, we say good and bad, and good and bad is such a whole trap in itself.
Concepts.
But,
we did the concept podcast, but light, dark.
Yeah.
Light and dark. Good, bad. It's all dualistic.
It is. But looking at the checkerboard idea of the world, how, you know, the Masons use it on there, you know, we're being told that there's this equal amount of, I guess, good or bad, or light or dark, or
move, counter move.
Yep, move, counter move in this world. So we played with the idea that the Bible, if it all works like this, then why wouldn't the Bible as well?
Mm.
That half of it be info and half of it be disinfo.
Mm-hmm.
If this world works this way, then did Lucifer have half? And God has access to half. And it's just how the world works. It's not either of them being more or less powerful. It's just how the world works.
Mm.
Playing with that idea, And for me, I found it very liberating and powerful. It means that were I to look at the Bible, any part of the Bible, I now have to go in with my senses on full alert. And I'd be looking for, there is stuff in here that is really useful. There is stuff in here that is really dodgy or dangerous, you know. That the idea that nothing will have affected the Bible, that it's the one place that it won't have been touched when it's been in the hands of, you know, humans and whatever else is in this world for thousands of years,
to me,
seems ridiculous.
Yeah, just look at Nicaea. You know, Nicaea is an example.
Right.
Constantine and Nicaea, that's all people really have to look at. And that's also when the idea, they came up with the idea that Jesus is God. That's when
right.
the original idea was inserted.
Okay.
In Nicaea. They okay. also took apart several books, and I just encourage everybody else to go look it up. Go look it up. Use your discernment.
Right.
Yeah. We're not saying, you Christians that are out there listening, we're not saying or jumping up and saying, only take what suits you, because that's also not what we're saying.
The biggest thing that I think has to happen here is that we have to reactivate our discernment. And I look at how many different ways our discernment is being put to sleep. And one of the things that concerns me with the Bible stories is, and again, at the end of this podcast, if you stay till the end, dump it all if you don't like it, you know, or if it makes no sense, it's fine. But just during this time to introduce different perspectives to allow you to look from a different angle, even for a very short period of time. Jesus, I've forgotten what I was going to say. And I just said Jesus too. Actually, one of the points that you said was in the work of Doug and Rob Skiba and Doug Hemp was about that Jesus should actually be Yeshua. And that the name Jesus was popped in.
Yeah, they have said that Yeshua is the original name in the Torah. However, the translation, and Doug said there is Yeshua does not translate to Jesus. So that word never existed. That word was actually made up by the Greeks. Okay. So we say Jesus. However, if you're down in the southern hemisphere,
South America.
America, Mexico, anything like it's Jesus.
Yeah, you pronounce it Jesus.
Which could be like H-E-Y-Z-E-U-S.
Yeah.
If you want to play around with symbolisms, Zeus could equal Lucifer, Zeus could equal Satan, if you want to look around through the symbolistic world.
Right, so we played with the idea that, what if Lucifer is behind half the Bible and Yeshua, or God, whatever, is behind the other half.
Right.
And that it is up to us to, by using our discernment, to discover which is the good stuff, in a sense, and which is the toxic stuff. Because, I've been a parent, you know. And it was so important for me, for my son, to be strong enough to cope in this world. Not that he come to me and need everything. I wanted him to be able to go out in the world and be strong. Now, wouldn't a loving God or creator want the same for you? Do they want you to bow down and worship them? You know, what if while you're bowing down and worshiping, someone comes up and, you know, nicks your car or you know, hits you over the head and steals your wallet or whatever, you know?
Mm.
It doesn't make a lot of sense. The other thing that doesn't make a lot of sense is everybody waiting for the second coming when Jesus is going to come and rescue them. Who is developing their discernment while they wait? Nobody. You cannot develop anything while you wait. There's a big difference between awaiting and waiting. Awaiting, you can be prepared for something, but you're going around and you're living your life, you're taking action, but this waiting that so many people are doing for a rescuer to come.
Right. And that, with you playing with the, or us playing with the idea that it's got, you know, like 60-40 that Lucifer put in his side, could be his character, could be, Jesus could be his character, Yeshua could be
60-40 or 50-50?
Oh, well, maybe it's even 50-50.
Just so we don't confuse the listeners.
50-50. But anyways, when you're saying that, it's also bringing to mind... oh, good Lord, now I'm going to go and draw a blank. it's bringing to mind the hand... When you're saying awaiting, rather than doing anything, you're just waiting... And when you're handing it over to the waiting, it stops you. It freezes you. You don't do the inner work that you should be doing.
Right.
Let's say, for instance, going out and I want to improve myself. I want to improve my communications. I'm not talking like the business world or something. Like Beyond Blame, for example. We use that. I got a lot out of that, being a guy. I know you've got a lot out of a choice theory. Mm-hmm. I did too. I did too. But I had to mix the Beyond Blame with the choice theory. To go, oh, wow, that's like that. And then, you know, we moved on to other books and et cetera, et cetera. But it's the inner work. It feels like the seals, like the inside. Like they talk about the seals in Revelations. And it feels like the inner seals inside are loosened up and coming off when we're doing the inner work.
Right, we're doing the inner work. Yeah,
when you're doing the inner work, you're not just waiting for Jesus to come save you. You're actually working on improving yourself, cleaning yourself inside, making yourself, like we said in the past, in the prior podcast, making yourself smooth, entity-free.
Mm-hmm.
And then as things progress, it's not so scary, actually. We even talked about this morning over breakfast about the idea of, if you're not doing the inner work, you're just going to hand it over to Jesus and just going to sit around, twiddle your thumbs, say, I'm a Christian, I'm good. You know, I'm good to my neighbor, I do this, I go tithe, I go to church. I'm all set. In the meantime, you're not doing any of the inner work. You and your wife can't communicate. I'm just taking a hypothetical. Yeah. You ignore your kids. You're not spending time with the family. You go do your own thing. You go hang out with your buddies. You have no idea what's going on in your inner world. You're kind of spacey. You're over here. You're over there. You can't communicate. Nothing. But you go to church every Sunday. You tithe, and Jesus is coming. However, we did discuss about the internal versus external.
Right.
Like, if you're not doing the inner work, you just go take a look at Revelations, you're going to get the external version of that. And why I'm saying this is my observation, our observation, because you've seen it too. Our observation of the world is it seems like they pull a lot out of us. They, meaning this Luciferian world, this Luciferian mindset, Luciferian agenda, for all you people out there that are into the alternative things that are thinking, oh, it's Luciferian, that's all, it's a Luciferian mindset. You know what? That's a deception as well. But they pull it out of us. They'll pull something out of us, out of the human heart. They flip it, turn it around, and give it back or sell it back to us.
Yeah, it's going
to
be selling it back.
They sell it back after they flipped it as being good, as being right, and everything. So after seeing this, we've seen this so many times, I'm like, well, what if you're not doing the inner work? This revelation that everybody keeps doom and glooming about, you're going to experience that because you haven't done the inner work.
You say you're going to experience it on an external...
Externally.
Yeah, externally.
Externally.
This is what... Yeah, I think it's just such a great idea that this is the revelation that's coming for those who will not... like inner cleanse in a sense, and I don't mean having some sort of
parasite cleanse. Why not?
Exactly.
You can do that
too. Well, that might be part of the work as well.
Yeah.
But the more physical, that you do the, you know, if inside mirrors outside, outside mirrors inside, if your inside is clear, your mirror is clear, are you going to be reflecting, you know, will that horrible stuff reflect back? You know, like in the Bible they had where, you know, where the blood was painted over the doors and the, you know,
right,
the bad angel, whatever he was, or the good angel, or
death.
Didn't visit those places. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe the more grudges you've got, the more the lack of discernment, the the giving up and waiting for someone to come and rescue you, the blaming other people, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The more you've got inside yourself, the more visible you are to these energies or entities. And the more you clean up inside, the less and less visible you are. There's nowhere for that to cling to, and it will pass you over or pass you by, or if it's going to touch, it's really not much of a touch.
Right. It did say in the Bible that, I remember Steve Quayle saying in one of his interviews that during Revelation, God's people would not experience this. Well, maybe that's just saying those who have connected in their heart, done the inner work, won't experience this. You're going to experience something else. I feel this is very a strong point that we discussed this morning at breakfast. It really tied into the whole, you know, it's like when I was doing some of the biblical research, and when I read to you the line out of the Cave of Treasures, which was removed. It's one of the books.
Okay, so let's just remind them again. So the Cave of Treasures was meant to be the book that directly follows Genesis.
I believe it was the following the expelling Adam and Eve from the garden. It was taken out. It was considered non-biblical for some reason. It's called the Cave of Treasures. You can go look it up online at sacredtext.com, I believe. It is in there. But one of the lines that said after Adam and Eve was expelled and etc., it said they couldn't see each other due to the darkness.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you read that literally, people say, oh, they're in a cave, there's no light, blah, blah, blah. You and I looked at each other and went, whoa, that they couldn't see each other. Now, if you're using blame, you're certainly not communicating, and you cannot see each other's inner world because you can't communicate. If the visual language was something we used way in the past, and it was removed from us, Tower of Babel, all of a sudden we all couldn't speak, blah, 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 and we all started using language, I don't know. But it just clicked. It was like, oh, Jesus, they couldn't see each other because of the darkness. It's because they couldn't see each other because they couldn't communicate. They were using blame. They were probably blaming each other. It's your fault that this happened. No, it's your fault. You read the Cave of Treasure sometimes, it's like, it's pretty rugged. It's pretty rough. You know, and I was just like, wow, this is all inner stuff. This is inner communication, connection,
the
heart.
And then, okay, so this is another really important point. This inner work that we're talking about, the New Age movement came along and said, you have to do the inner work yourself. And it made it all about you. You go and improve yourself or learn to love yourself or improve your self-esteem, whatever it is. But you do it basically by yourself.
Which is
you make yourself good,
yeah.
The I, and then your life will get better. Whereas this is just, it just doesn't work that way. We are in relationship to everything else. And the work is done through the relationship, and the work is done through I improve myself, for want of a better word, when I when I acknowledge Michael and I show him respect, Michael's an example, okay, this can be for anyone and everyone. I acknowledge this person as a fellow human being who has a right to his own way of thinking and seeing and choosing and being and expressing himself. And I make space in my life for his differences, that just because I think it should be one way or no, this is about relationship. Relationship is where, and it's not about getting something off the other person. A really good way to look at it is in Aikido. In Aikido, you cannot practice without a partner. You cannot learn without a partner. And when you work with your partner, if you find a good partner, you don't want to lose that good partner. Because there's such a difference between working with them and working with others who are only, you know, half-hearted. And before, with your partner, before you do anything, you always bow to each other. And when you're finished working with them, and you will take turns, one person will do the technique, the other one will allow themselves to be worked upon, and then vice versa. When you're finished working with them, you bow to them again. It is total respect all the way through. Respect is that I cannot do anything or learn anything without you. And that is reciprocal. There's not one or the other person who's more important. It is so much this 50-50, this meeting in the middle. And we, I don't think it's that we've forgotten it. I think we've been completely trained and programmed right out of it. Seriously so. And we have to take some serious action now to turn ourselves around and reconnect. You know, a huge part of that reconnecting is in humility. The humility which just says, oh, fuck, I'm not the be-all and end-all and the number one And to look at the things that we've been chasing after. When you chase after fame, that's about being number one. That's about being a big I. You know, when you are trying to get attention for yourself, that's another big I. That's me, 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 me. And the thing is, we're not bad people for that. This is how we've been trained. We've been trained right from the word go to look for this kind of thing, that it means you're good or worthwhile. Everything, like Michael said, has been pulled out of us, flipped around, and given back to us again. Did you want to say something?
No, I was just listening to you.
Oh, okay. Sorry, you took the notes, and I was you're preparing to say something. And yeah, anyway, this wasn't meant to be a long. We really wanted to touch over a few things.
Yeah. In the ancient past, also, we had a little bit of play about the idea, and that was well said, by the way, what you just said.
Thank you.
Because for the gentlemen that are listening out there, there is nothing more empowering for me than the idea of a we. I draw strength from the we. And here I am with the eye crap. It's not what I want for myself or I can do for myself, I think. What can I do for Alex? And what can I do for us? Before I even think of the I,
right?
For me. And it's just so much smoother, so much smoother. It just seems to gel. It just seems to flow. It just seems to go.
Actually, one idea I had about that, just butting in there for a second, was that when you have that question, what can I do for this person? I remember this comes up in the William Glasser book, The Choice Theory. And how many couples he helped, and they would just magically start to turn things around, you know? It seems so, they were so focused on the blame and what the other person had done to them. And it was amazing. We were talking about this the other day. It was amazing for me to listen and go, my God. And you could actually see both sides of the story. You could see where both people were coming from, you know? And you could feel for both of them. But you could see it was going nowhere. They would never meet up again as long as they were on the, well, you did this and you did this. And it was amazing. It's not that they don't have valid points. You know, when we have a grudge, it's not that it's not valid. This is where we get stuck too. A grudge comes from the fact that you've been hurt and the hurt wasn't repaired. For whatever reason, and you know, this is not a fair world, so there's lots of things. So the grudge of itself is valid. And the thing is, the grudge will also destroy your life. It will eat it up bit by bit by bit, and your world will become smaller and smaller and smaller.
And it destroys relationship.
And it destroys relationship. And yet you have this strange thing that when you can flip it around, okay, what can I do for this person? Instead of how can I blame them, what can I do for them?
Right.
My feeling was that it allows you to return to mastery. There's a really interesting book called Drive, which says that the three things that we really need, the three things for humans are autonomy, mastery, and relatedness. Mastery is when you get the chance to do something and improve upon it and improve upon it and improve upon it. With a grudge, you cannot improve upon a grudge. You can just get more angry and bitter. But when you say, what can I do? suddenly you can activate your inner self, your creativity, your mind gets to work. What can I do for this person? And you're not trying to get reward back from it. You are, what can I do for this person? And you are free then to decide. You're choosing what you will do. Obviously, it does need to be something the other person's going to appreciate. It can't just be, I'll
go buy you a football.
Yeah, for the wife. I'll go and buy them a football, you know? But you get to choose of the things. You're taking an action. You're taking action.
Mm.
You are, and you're going to feel good because this thing that you do is actually also going to feed you. So I just thought that would kind of fit in with the mastery. Mastery, so when we talked at the beginning about this need to take action rather than waiting,
yeah.
This is partly about mastery. Any time we practice mastery, we improve ourselves. We humans are just, we light up with mastery or attempt. You never get to master something. But to improve upon, to try it a different way, to... Okay, I'll try this. What if I add this? Okay, what about over here? And we engage. We get to engage fully in something when we are going towards mastery. We are improving the quality of our life, the quality of our relationships. I just think it's so important.
Right. Well said again. What I started to say back before I got the original well said and we went off that way. Was an example of the move counter move. Prior to the flood, pre-flood.
Okay, so hold on. We're going back to the Bible.
Originally started to say. An example of move counter move would be like pre-flood. There were so many, and there still is, solar worshiping cults.
Right. That
worship the sun, S-U-N. God probably got a little fed up with it. Decided, okay, I'm going to overlay my sun, S-O-N, over the sun worship, which a lot of people just say, no, it's Jesus is still solar worship. I'm not talking about Jesus. I'm talking about Yeshua. Yeshua, I guarantee, two different characters. I was just using that as an example because we had it in the notes.
Right. So just to make sure everyone's definitely up with us. The counterfeit.
Yeah, the last
that was brought podcast, in by
last podcast.
Who was it who introduced that idea? Was that
counterfeit?
Yeah.
I think it was Doug and Rob. Oh no, that's L.A. Marzulli was talking. He's got a book like the Jigguru Grand Chess Match or something like that.
Right. So there's the suggestion that
he suggests that Lucifer moves, God counter moves, etc., etc.
Right.
And
right.
God doesn't let Lucifer get away with much. However, again, the Luciferians that think that they're the experts out there are just going to say it's the Luciferian mindset. That's a whole other thing to get you off track. There's enough out there in history, the pre-flood stuff, like Rob Skiba and Doug Knapp and Steve Quayle will show you. There's more evidence out there supporting the Genesis 6 giants, etc. The last podcast we did, I got a little bit sidetracked. I wanted to correct myself on the whole where I suggested the gay Bible, which is not. King James was gay, yes. The King James
okay.
Bible.
We'll come because we didn't actually go into that.
We touched on it.
We touched.
And I think I said something that might have been misleading. It was, yes, that we looked a little bit into King James, the King James version of the Bible.
You and I, we will, just to make sure, because you and I have also talked about this, and to make sure that it's, the listeners are fully, because we discussed about the idea that previously we'd looked at what we were seeing was this.
Right, but just let me get this straight. Okay. We looked up King James, and he admitted to having lovers, correct? Male lovers. King James.
King James was... a homosexual, and King James was the one who brought out the
right.
King James Bible.
Okay,
yes.
That's all I wanted right there. I wanted to clarify that I wasn't going and saying the Bible was gay. What we've seen in the artistic depictions, you and I have had discussions about what we've seen as artists has put out there. They're not the ones that wrote the Bible. They're the artists that have put up the artwork. Seem to be, or the artists seem to have some sort of a gay influence on
yeah.
the artwork.
Right. You made a good point. So, exactly. There's definitely this homoerotic, is the best I can do it, depictions of Jesus that go back for us such a long way. And yet...
This is the artwork.
This is the artwork, yeah. This is the artwork. So, because we're so used to seeing the artistic depictions, and then we've heard the stories.
Associating,
but they're actually
two
separate things. You've got the Bible,
mm-hmm.
and so you wonder why were you know all these paintings, these homoerotic paintings of Jesus, and it's hard because you grow up seeing Jesus with a little loincloth and completely sort of spread eagle on the cross. And you're told the awful story about how he died for, you know, your sins, because you are a sinner of epic proportion, as am I, and Michael, so are you. Wouldn't want to leave you out.
No, I sin more than Ross.
So, we were told this equals this, and this great suffering, but simply if you look at the artistic depictions...
Right. Leave the book out.
Yeah.
Just looking at the art.
Yeah. The artistic depictions are, it's like, wow.
Mm.
Wow, that is pretty interesting over such a long period of time.
Yeah.
You, the question comes down to, why is that there? Is that there? Am I seeing it? Are we making it up? There's that too, you know, could
right.
be imagining it.
Right.
But when you look at it, you go, that is unusual.
That and we've been always sold that he would have the long flowing hair.
Right.
And the mustache and the beard. Now, one of the researchers, I'm not sure exactly who it was. I want to say it was Doug.
You mentioned this one last week about that. Yeah, you did.
Okay,
yeah.
That he would not look like that, because
mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to pull this together now, because
yeah.
you've read the book, now you're getting the artist depictions, and he wouldn't even have looked like that.
Right.
Been like, close-cropped hair, no facial hair at the time.
Right.
G.I. Joe.
The artist depictions didn't really come in, from my understanding. We watched that travel program the other day. Giotto was the first one. He was back in around the 13th or 14th century. And prior to that, he was the first one who started doing the pictures where you had a certain, you know, they had emotions on their face. They had,
right.
So this is where you're starting to see, and this is Italy,
mm-hmm.
And you're starting to see this now, the depiction of the Bible coming into... The visual, prior to that it was all verbal.
Right.
And with the visuals came this, you know what you say, it is almost like a homoerotic portrayal of, I don't know, do they just, but perhaps in the Bible they're also saying he wears a loincloth and just the whole, If I am using my discernment, I have to question the depictions.
Yes.
And not only that, for myself, and I'll say this for myself, I do question the entire... The crucifixion story, was it necessary? If we look at the words of Jesus and what he came to do...
Yeshua,
you're quite right. Yeah, I'm... Then the message... What I wondered was, getting caught up, hold on, come here. You and I have wondered if the work that needs to be done now is about opening up our heart, not to anything, bringing our heart back to life again.
Yeah, bring it back.
Living by the heart, through the heart, from the heart, and that, let's just say, what if Jesus is not coming back, there's no second coming? God has never stepped into this world so far that I can see. But what if his way through is through the heart? So the only way that he can be active in this world is through us and through the heart. The more we cleanse and clear our heart, remove the grudges, remove the anger or the hatred, bring in the humility. This is learn how to communicate.
Mm.
Do the work. Come back into relationship with each other. This is then, boom, up comes God out. And when we're speaking, we are speaking God or whatever he is. And we are
right.
living. We become.
That could be what
it
means by the living God.
The living God, yes.
It could be.
Exactly. So taking that, what I just wanted to pop back and say was with Yeshua then, if he came here, the suggestion I would say would be that he came to simply try to get the hearts ignited again, to get them beating again, to get that going, the starter point, this, like a starter culture. In what way would his crucifixion aid that starting of the heart? To me, it doesn't. It shuts you down. It goes, oh, God, you know, it's just so heavy, and it's so...
Right.
And we played with the idea that, you know, it was Lucifer who popped in the crucifixion story.
Yeah.
It wasn't even there. Jesus took off in a little van.
No, Yeshua. You know? Yeshua.
Sorry. Okay. Yeshua took off in the van, and the character called Jesus, that name put in, is not... You know, what if Jesus is a counterfeit name for Lucifer?
Yeah, could be.
And then you have the depiction on the cross, and you've got the sun worship, because we, you know, we've seen that whole sun worshipy type thing.
Right.
This sun on a cross. And so people wanting to give and rejoice for the words of Yeshua and follow that end up actually transferring their attention, their worship, their
honor. You mean Jesus.
Sorry. You can,
you're new to
people,
this.
Use their use your discernment. What I'm saying?
Yeah.
I need to change that. The Jesus Lucifer character.
Yeah.
If there was one. Okay, we're playing
yes.
here.
Yeah, we just came
because
up.
I don't know.
No, the crucifixion sounds like a, if you go by Luciferianism, it, like a blood ritual, a sacrifice.
Absolutely.
Catholic Church, you go in for the whole host wine, this is my body, this is my blood, and you're taking part in a ritualistic, I don't know.
Yeah, you say for you it's cannibalistic.
Cannibalistic.
Right.
To me.
You know, and we're doing this podcast today, we're doing our best. What we want to say is bring your heart back to life.
Yeah.
And in saying that, there is nothing in me that could say, and by the way, go and look at some, you know, go and get massacred, or go and, you know, go and get beaten, or go and, you know, nail your, you know, suffer. I need you to go and suffer in order to be able to do this. In what way does a heart open up and come back to life, blossom, with all this horrible sacrifice and blood, and that my heart would crumple up?
No, we had discussed that it's the line that that I quoted and I said to you. Adam walked in the garden with God as friends.
Right.
As friends, which is relationship, which would not be blood sacrifice, which would not be... Again, we questioned the whole Abraham thing. You know, was it Lucifer that brought him to the brink? And then God said, whoa, hold on, what the hell are you doing?
Right.
You know?
You know, what if you did? If you went through the Bible and you look, move, counter move. You know, who are we talking about here? Are we talking Jesus? Or Yeshua?
Yeah.
Are we talking God or Lucifer?
Right.
You know? And you use your discernment. And, you know, even if you went... I can see it would be so hard for a lot of people because they have to stay. They believe that... You know,
yeah.
For me, like I said about my son before, I would much rather him question me and develop his discernment than obey me in every word. How dare you not believe in every word? And then he never developed any discernment or any strength. Come on, look at this world. You cannot get by.
Mm.
You have got to develop real discernment to survive here.
Yeah. I'm not... Yeah. Anyways, we're not saying the Bible is all... It's just...
I don't know.
One of the areas.
You don't know. I don't know. We talk about it. We
it's
don't
one
know.
One of the areas
but
that's the chessboard.
I believe that it's all right to wonder.
Yeah.
And then make your decision consciously and go back and go, nope, I'm happy. This is how it is. Oh, good for you.
Yeah. By the way, I have a picture. As I know you wanted me to mention this. We thought about posting it.
Oh, right.
I have a picture. I had played around when I did the Hidden Agendas with some NASA photographs. I stumbled across this little anomaly in a lot of the nebula pictures that NASA would post that supposedly was from the Hubble telescope. What I did was I folded it in half with Photoshop. I mirrored it. And what I got back were these really weird faces looking back at me. So I decided to take some of the artist depictions, like Jesus' Last Supper by Da Vinci.
Da Vinci, yeah.
I mirrored it. And we'll show you the results. You have a nice pyramid with the capstone hovering above overhead.
Right.
And it's like, How is that even possible?
Because we have wondered, you know, okay, books can be channeled, TV programs, you know, scripts can be channeled. Why can't painting be channeled? Who's to say that an artist was an artist, rather they were a channeler?
Hmm.
And their, you know, great artworks is actually channeled stuff, and that then it's stuff is, who, you know, what's hidden in there.
Hmm.
The fact that, you know, what we talked about, the homoerotic depiction of Jesus over centuries, you know, did... You know when someone knows their stuff, so supposedly an artist would know other artists.
Mm-hmm.
Surely an artist would go, oh, you know, they would see it. You would expect that they would see it.
Mm.
Like you would expect someone who knows music to hear things within music.
Mm.
And yet none of them are going, oh, that's quite,
mm-hmm.
you know, homoerotic. That's quite.
Right.
You know? Now I'm surprised that they would be doing that. You know, are we allowed to do it like that?
Right.
You know, this is Jesus.
Right.
And, so you kind of think they might have, you know, made it more appropriate in some way.
Right.
But it hasn't been. And it's worth 2%. I think it's worth 2% doubt.
Right.
I think it's worth.
Yeah.
But again, and this is us bringing to you, and we expect you, if you're to meet us halfway and you make... And anything that comes from this is your stuff. What's that?
Use your discernment.
It is. It's yours. Anything that comes out of this, it's not us. We will have switched off and be doing other things when you listen to this. We're not even here anymore, you know? We're not doing this podcast. Now it's you and the words you're hearing. What will you do with them?
Right.
And what you do, entirely up to you. You know, it's not, it has to be forward or against it or upside down or inside out. Just, you know.
Yeah.
But if it helps you practice your discernment, if it gives you another perspective that allows you to just, wow, if I look from over here, it's quite different from looking over here.
Mm.
I'm not going to stay over here. But now I've got these two points of reference and I can move around and, wow, I like it from this area.
Right.
And that would just be so wonderful.
Right. Right, and one little, just before we go, one little addendum to it. Like, we were just having tea, afternoon tea, and Alex said something. I was talking about the video games. Yeah, video games, massive, billion-dollar industry, worldwide, billion-dollar industry. United States, huge video games. And Peter Molyneux and some other people like Steve, what's his name? Not Jobs, Steve Cartwright? I think it was Steve Cartwright that came up with The Sims, I think. Correct me if I'm wrong, somebody. Came up with these God games. Highly addictive. And Steve Quayle, the other night, we watched an interview with Steve Quayle and Tom Horn, and he was talking about the three promises of Lucifer. Immortality, you shall be as gods, and was immortality... and you shall have all knowledge. When you said something and it just went click in my head about the God games and how addictive they are, and I was like, oh man, maybe that was you shall be as gods. You're playing a God game. What's Lucifer going to do? He's going to counterfeit, or he's going to come up with these promises he came up with originally. Through technology.
Right.
The immortality could be transhumanist movement. The you shall be as gods. Yeah, go on the computer and you can create your whole world right there.
Right.
Virtual reality. You know? Mm-hmm. And the whole knowledge is the web. Mm-hmm. The internet. Oh, man. That just click, click, click. But anyways, I'm digressing.
Okay. But while you were talking, I thought of something else that I hadn't. This is a short podcast, gets longer.
Yeah.
Because you just reminded me, and again, this is such an important thing, I think, for discernment. I've been listening to an audio book called Drive, and it talks about he says, we have three drives. Humans have three drives. And there is an inner intrinsic drive, which I think probably a lot of people who listen to this podcast, that will be where they come from. It means that you work internally. You don't do things for rewards. You do things because it feels good inside of you. It feels right, etc. Now, this information has been known for quite a long time by a few people, that this inner drive. The book is specifically more about business and how people work. So when you, most people work under a manager, and you either get, it's the carrot or the stick. You know, you get a reward for being good, or you get told off or whatever for not being productive enough. Now, apparently it's been known for a long time that people work much better if they have autonomy, they can do mastery, that just tell them what you want done and let them get on with it.
Right.
And now, so research done, but nothing done with it. It hasn't spread out into the whole working world at all. But what's interesting is that this knowledge has spread out to certain places. Now, Google is one of those places where it is allowed. So Google did this thing where they would allow people either 15 or 20% time to work on whatever project they wanted.
Yeah.
This is utilizing the human, this human drive to be creative, to add to the world,
mm-hmm.
this massive drive that we have. They found a way to utilize it.
Yeah.
And they would give them like 20% time, work on whatever you like. No one's going to hound you. Work on your own project. Now, I was just listening before when I was out in the car that most of Google's amazing projects have come up during this time, have been created. Gmail,
of course,
was created during this time. It's one of the huge ones. They mentioned a number of other ones as well. They've mentioned another other companies, the big companies. So what I wanted to say here was that here is humanity working according to the correct way of humanity, which is to come from the inside out, feel like you're doing good, adding to the world. The only thing that's missing to my mind in this, discernment. Because how good, for want of a better word, is Google?
Mm.
How life-enhancing?
Mm.
You know, when we see them, they seem to be spying on everything. They have their hands in every pie, you know.
I call it the Google AI. But...
okay, so what we got here is people. This is basic human nature. They want to do good. They want to have a good effect.
Yeah.
And they're being, their work is being harnessed and harvested from them. They willingly give it. It is the stuff they are willingly, almost freely given.
Of course.
That is being taken now.
Of course.
And put into and used as even greater and greater containment for the rest of humanity. This is where discernment is lacking, this willingness to see the world as it is, the reality, like, hey.
Right.
You know, I wonder now, when you think about the scientists who have, you know, supposedly killed themselves, committed suicide.
Have been found dead.
Right.
A lot of them
because they were doing this work,
right.
And then suddenly, but too late, their discernment kicked in and go, oh, hang on a minute.
Yeah.
And then that's the end of them. Yeah. We have an absolute duty to ourselves, those we love, to this world, to develop our discernment on every level. To have discernment within our relationships, you know. The discernment is, look at yourself. You know, look, instead of blaming other people, what is it and in how many ways are you fucking up? You know, ask other people. Ask for truth. Ask for feedback, because maybe this time we have is not so long anymore.
Yeah.
Everything's speeding up, and maybe you don't care for yourself, but I bet there's people you do care for.
Right.
And you could make a difference to them. And, yeah. So, that's it, really.
Okay. All right, we just wanted to make this like a 40-minute addendum.
Oh, okay,
podcast.
One more thing. On the last thing, you said it yourself.
Oh, right. this morning when we were talking about the inner work and experiencing the external revelations, we've noticed the hard and fast attack on children being some of the stuff we've talked about to clear up our inner world. It's happened to us as children. This world is not set up for the benefit of children. It's actually, it exploits them. And also, since we were never given any tools as children to process our emotions, to just clear anything like grudges or anything in the inner, or to, even the trauma a trauma. Right. Like a child being taken away from their mother to go to kindergarten. That is so traumatic. I remember how traumatic it was. And when they have all these traumas, they have no way to process it. So it just goes round and round inside them. Children need their inner work as well.
Yeah. And that's where you can, it's not just about you. You can help them. And I've seen a lot of books out there on raising your kids, and I haven't read them, so I can't say. What I will say is that the books that we listed in the last podcast are really valuable. You can take the information and apply them to the children. You see, there's so many books out there, and I'm not sure how good they are for
they
children.
They did have a section in, I think it was in Beyond Blame and Glassers about children, family.
What I would say is you could go to these adult books, and if you learn yourself, then you can teach this to your children. You can't force it on your children.
No.
You can actually go to these books like Choice Theory of the Blame, learn how to control it in yourself. And if anything, you can't teach your children, right? You be like this. They're learning from you.
Right.
The more you make the changes, the more this will pass on to them. They learn by almost absorbing what you're doing. But they need help too.
Yeah.
You help yourself. You clear out your inner stuff. You will help them. Don't try and force them to change. You do your work first. It's, you know, just kick up the bum time for all of us.
Yeah.
We need to do this work. It's not enough. The conspiracy stuff, absolutely, learn it. See what's going on in the world. Absolutely, we're doing the same thing. We're keeping up, but it's 50% of.
Yeah, that's where you.
What's even probably 30%
discernment,
for us.
Use the discernment with the conspiracy world and then move on. Don't get caught up in the net of always having to check. This has happened to me when I was doing the hidden agendas. Finally, I just got overloaded and sick of it and said, that's it, enough. I didn't do anything for quite some time.
Right.
That's when I stumbled across the whole giants thing, and then I started doing some more research. Went in a different direction, but I was able to pull it together with everything I had done prior. Don't get caught up in the whole conspiracy world.
It's both. This is where I think it's so important. What I want to do and keep going in the future is this, okay, this looking at it from this side, and then there's the doing the inner work. And it's the two together.
Mm.
It's pulling them together. Like I'm stitching the two together. They become... they're integrated. Both are integrated.
Yeah.
We are not living within the structure. We see great people, wonderful people, and they're within the structure. They can go so far and then they have to stop because they believe in the structure. And then there's the people who are willing to just go out and look at, you know, for the conspiracy world or for want of a better word and really go into that. But then they get stuck as well because they think it's enough to have the information.
Yeah.
To be like this fully integrated human. It's both together, and there are so few people who are doing both, putting both together.
Right. It just made me think. It's the rebuilding a bridge between the heart and the head.
Lovely. Well done. Well said.
It's rebuilding that bridge.
Okay, we'll end on that note.
All right.
Thank you for joining us again.
Yes, thank you. And Alex will put up that before and after picture of
Leonardo
the Last
da Vinci.
Supper,
yeah.
And you can see what
I can wonder about the artist then,
Okay. All right. Thank you, Alex.
Thank you, Michael.
We'll see
you. Bye, everyone.
Bye.